Tomorrow night will be the first of Elul, the beginning of the month that precedes Rosh Hashanah. It's often seen as a propitious time for acts of forgiveness. For some, it's also starting to plan the menu for Rosh Hashanah lunch. So for some people, that's really what this is all about. But nothing wrong with that, because forgiveness and a good meal can't go together. So we have to become totally abstemious. What I like to focus on today is something that I've been struggling with for many, many, many years, and continue to struggle with. And I have not yet, I'm not sure if I'll ever stop struggling with it, but I'd like to offer a little bit about the essential thing, as Rabbi Lou reminds us, self-forgiveness is the essential act of the high holiday season. That's why we need heaven, he says, and that's why we need God. We forgive others on our own, but we turn to God because we cannot forgive ourselves. Receive God's forgiveness. We receive it as a gift, undeserved and paid in full. So it's a bit of a paradox. You know, we want to do our own self, if we will, forgiveness, yet we might need help from outside of ourselves. I'll spend the time in a future teaching about how we can understand God, because I'm not sure we all have different ways of perceiving it, but I want to just say I'm not a fan of the word God. I'm not a fan. It's in Jewish terms, it doesn't mean anything, because. But I won't get into that right now. I want to deal with self-forgiveness. There are so many sources. This is an issue for a lot of people, including myself. I have, as some of us have done, done things we really are not proud of, things that basically stay with us, and in many, many ways, stop us from developing the kind of self-esteem we need. And I've looked through the sources. I'm going to share some with you. I have a source sheet, and if people would like to see it, I will send it. So Confucius says, the more you know yourself, the more you forgive yourself. Self-knowledge and self-forgiveness seem to be the theme. So one of the ways we should do this, and from a psychological point of view, I got this from Anne, my wife Anne, who works in a system called Internal Family Systems, where it talks about the fact that all of us have different parts, and those parts all serve a purpose, and eventually, in order to consolidate those parts, we have to give each part of ourselves sort of permission to exhibit itself. But one of the things, I was reading a piece by Rick Hansen, he said one of the ways we deal with that in parts work, and I think in self-forgiveness, is you really need your inner protector. You have, that's one of the parts we have, is a protector to stick up for you, right? When you let that part speak, the inner protector serves to, if you will, assuage some of the conflicts that we have within ourselves. To put your weaknesses and misdeeds in perspective, to highlight your many good qualities surrounding your lapses, to encourage you to keep getting back on the high road, even you've gone down the low one, and frankly, to tell that inner critic to shut up. Sounds great, not easy. In my own life, I've been working real hard on this, more than faux pas, but I mean, mistakes. With the support of this inner protector, Hansen tells us, you can see your faults clearly with fearing that it will drag you into a pit of feeling awful. So basically, it allows us to clean up whatever mess that we've made as best as we can and move on. The only wholesome purpose of guilt, shame, and remorse is learning, not punishment, that you don't mess up again in that way again. Anything past the point of learning is just needless suffering. plus excessive guilt, etc., actually gets in the way of you contributing to others and helping make this world a better place by undermining your energy, your mood, your confidence, and your sense of worth. Seeing faults clearly, taking responsibility for them and making amends, and then coming to peace about them. This is what Hansen means by forgiving yourself. He writes from a Buddhist perspective, but again, it's so similar to our Jewish perspective, which I'll get to in a minute. Also found a wonderful teaching from a very interesting teacher that some of you may know, named Thupten Chodron, T-H-U-B-T-E-N. I had met her in my trip to India to meet the Dalai Lama. She was part of the community around the Dalai Lama. She's a nun and an abbess of a female monastery. She also happened to become of Jewish origins. By the way, we met many of the circle around the Dalai Lama who came into this world as Jews, and they all have interesting stories which we can't get into now. And I've become very much involved in the teaching of Buddhist thought. She says that we get confused, lost, and overwhelmed as we try to live a life that is full of illusion and distraction from our true existence is a fact. That we can overcome this confusion, this feeling of being lost and alone and overwhelmed, is also a fact. As my teacher has recently shared with me, we have a basic nature that is pure of heart and mind and untainted. What happens as we get caught up in the illusion and the cycle of self-hatred is that our pure nature gets obscured like a blue sky that has billowing clouds covering it. The sky is still blue and pure, but we must remove those clouds to see the blue sky clearly. In a Jewish context, this is kind of interesting as well. I found that a number of the descriptions of the Jewish concept of self-forgiveness relies on, believe it or not, poetry. And we'll get to that in a moment. I found in a more orthodox setting, believe it or not, this kind of discussion. Every time it's just you alone with your little dark secret, you feel like a real loser, a jerk. You failed again. Are you ever going to change? Can you ever forgive yourself? According to psychologist Fred Luskin, who directs an interesting project at Stanford University, it's called the Stanford University Forgiveness Project, and he's author of a book, Forgive for Good. So the biggest obstacle, and I find this is true for myself, to self-forgiveness may be our tendency to wallow in our own guilt. Luskin discovered that the biggest obstacle of self-forgiveness may be our tendency to do that. He says it's not just that we feel bad because we know we've done wrong, he explains. Everybody does that. But some of us actually draw those bad feelings around ourselves like a blanket, covering our heads and refuse to stop the wailing. Instead of taking responsibility for what we've done by trying to repair the damage or search for help, many of us unconsciously decide to punish ourselves by feeling miserable for the rest of our lives. And what gives us the tacit approval to continue to slip up, and so the cycle continues. So what can we do about it? So Jewish tradition addresses this with a prayer to say every night just before falling asleep. I hereby forgive anyone who annoyed me or mocked me or who sinned against me, whether physically, financially, or hurt my honor or anything else of mine, whether accidentally, willingly, unintentionally, or intentionally, whether in speech or in action, in this life or any other, and no person should be punished because of what they did to me. It's a wonderful prayer, therapeutic, cleansing, purifying, finishing the day like that puts things in perspective. You don't have to take yourself so seriously. You don't have to stew over slights and affronts to your status or ego. It clears your mind and soul so you can sleep calmly and rise afresh. In another book by Rabbi Zelig Plissken, he says, when we forgive others, we help ourselves as much as we help those whom we forgive. We are elevating ourselves and feel much better when we forgive. That then if we would keep on adding more and more resentment. I'm not talking only about making amends with others. I'm also talking about the ways, he says, we harm ourselves. With no one else directly involved, how can you forgive yourself for those recurring mistakes, those serial sins, or in Jewish tradition we say those times we have missed the mark and that you feel guilty about for years? You beat yourself up for days, brooding, putting yourself down, despairing of ever climbing out of the pit that you've dug for yourself. And all that self-chastisement inhibits your life, makes you depressed, restricts any growth of personal development, not to mention how it affects your health and how you react to those around you. But let's be honest, you're probably not the worst person in the world. You're a soul created in the image of God, and you are allowed to forgive yourself. And herein lies that power of the nightly prayer. We can read it a little differently this time, he suggests. I hereby forgive myself for getting annoyed or mocking myself for something I did today, or for sinning against myself, whether abusing my body, finances, or damaging my honor or anything else. Whether accidentally, willingly, unintentionally, or intentionally, whether it be in speech or in action, in this life or any other, and I should not be punished because of what I did to myself or to anyone else. I'm also fascinated by this prayer referring to the fact that we have had other lives. Of course, you have to express, as we say in the act of tshuva, we have to express genuine remorse and come up with serious intentions and a self-control plan to do better. And of course, you have to apologize to anyone you've offended or hurt. Now here's the second part of the prayer. May it be your will. You hear that song? May it be your will, my God, may God of my ancestors, that I should not err again, should not repeat my mistake, and that I shouldn't anger you anymore or do bad in your eyes. In your great mercy, may you erase the mistakes I have made, but not through suffering or terrible disease. May the words of my mouth and the meditations of my heart be acceptable to you, my rock and my redeemer. But adopting prayer as a daily habit will go a long way calming you down and helping you forgive yourself. So why don't you start thinking about this and perhaps even say this prayer tonight. There are many other prayers that are suggested and poetry that is suggested. And I'm always very pleased that the people try to appeal perhaps to other aspects of their perception, not only prose, but also poetry. This is from a wonderful rabbi who writes a great deal. She has a book called Talking to God, Personal Prayers for Times of Joy, Sadness, Struggle, and Celebration. So when we are too hard on ourselves, he suggests this little prayer. Teach me how to love myself, God. I am so critical of myself and others, but I am so unforgiving of myself. Teach me how to enjoy my life. Show me how to embrace the person that I am. Soften my heart. Fill me with the capacity to treasure my life. Thank you, God, for creating me as I am. So, doing research, I've discovered that there are other wonderful approaches to this issue of self-forgiveness. I'll only take a few more minutes and open it up for discussion. Rabbi Karen Kadar, who also writes about issues of personal development, growth, says, does Jewish tradition provide a roadmap for self-forgiveness? And she says, as we strive to love others, we often forget to love ourselves. It is as if self-love is forbidden But actually, it is commanded in the love your neighbor as yourself teaching that self-love is an imperative. As we deepen the love for ourselves, we deepen the capacity to love others. We have so many regrets. There are so many times that we could have or should have chosen a different path and gone in a different direction. And every time we use the word should, we accuse ourselves of not doing our best. Guilt and regret are heavy on our souls. Imagine how much creative and loving energy we would have if regret and guilt did not weigh us down. Love heals. It heals the wounded soul. It heals the relationships we cherish. It heals the world. Self-love strengthens our ability to be loving beings, and it takes practice. And try offering, she says, this affirmation daily for a period of time. Forgive yourself and practice being in self-love in your mind and heart. I love that. You have to practice as if you are in that state of self-affirmation, but it might not really sink in unless you do it, as she says, in a more ordered and continuous way. So she suggests this beautiful poem. God, thank you for helping me see that each phase of life, of my life, is perfect, that I have arrived, that I've always been where I need to be, living perfect moments. With your help, I relinquish my need to judge, help me grow with love and acceptance and curiosity. And thank you for lighting my way, for gently illuminating a path in the darkness. Let it now be and always be yet another exquisite phase. For the crimes against myself, I am sorry. For all slips and slides, I forgive myself. Now, our practice appeals to the basic idea that what we are doing is basically being in the now. One of the things that I read about a gentleman who does the practice for many, many years. It comes from a book with a very long title of Mark Coleman, Make Peace with Your Mind, How Mindfulness and Compassion Can Free You from Your Inner Critic, which teaches how to use meditation practice to soothe our negative inner voices. One of the things he says I most appreciated about my years of meditation practice is having made peace with my humanness. It's not that I don't aspire to grow and develop and work on myself, but I am no longer holding myself to some impossible ideal. The less I expect myself to be perfect and never mess up, the more likely I am to make headway towards forgiving myself. I am more able to release the heavy guilty burden that I've been carrying for painful things I've done in the past, for the things that I regret. You know, we say often that what we are trying to do when we sit and meditate is to learn to be in the now. And being in the now meaning that what happened in the past or regrets can no longer be returned to. And ultimately, it also says that they really can't be forgiven. And that's why the working hard on self-forgiveness in the now is perhaps the only way to deal with it. And certainly, hopefully, that our commitment to the now will also allow us to have the strength and vitality of not doing the same things in the future. That really is the great challenge that we have. And I will just do one last thing, and then we will open up for a little discussion. And that is, let me find what I'm looking for. Yes, I found. Okay. I found a nice piece from a site which I never knew. It's called Better Help. And I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I'll send those you know, with stuff to Reggie. I hope she will distribute it. So basically, what happens when you forgive yourself? When you take steps to forgive yourself, you accept responsibility for what happened. You express remorse, guilt, or other similar emotions that point out what you did wrong or unacceptably. You make amends with yourself while restoring self-trust. I like that word, self-trust. Because one of the things that when you do something, and this is my own interpretation, is when you do something that was extremely wrong and you carry that guilt, what you have to do is, can you establish trust in your own self that you're not going to do it again? It's very much like what Maimonides says. You have to articulate what you have done, you have to express remorse, and then the great test will be that you don't do it again when the same situation arises. The proof will always be in the pudding, if I can use that term. Now, when you're responsible, you show compassion for yourself while putting things behind you. And the first step, of course, is what we said, taking responsibility. You shouldn't make excuses or justify why you did it. You face the facts and leave it by accepting your actions. Accepting your actions limits the amount of guilt and regret. So it is normal to feel guilty or to be ashamed if you've done something wrong. So if you see that point, that your mistake as a beginning of a new process, and you may see yourself as a bad person when feeling shameful. And shame brings unwanted feelings that could lead to depression or addiction. And when you acknowledge mistakes with forgiveness, it doesn't take away from your values. So learning how to forgive yourself is part of understanding what to do to make things right again. If you need to apologize, do so meaningfully. You may think doing this benefits the other person more, but it is beneficial for you as well. And this article goes on about why these things are good for your mental health, why they are good for other health that you want to continue to have. And finally, I love this idea, why this is not easy. Forgiveness isn't easy because it is hard to accept the fact you made a mistake. Dwelling on it may lead to self-hatred, which is what you should avoid. It may not be easy to practice forgiveness if you're not able to take back what happened and make things right. It is hard to come to terms with something that doesn't line up with your values or beliefs. Sometimes deep feelings of regret and guilt result in doing something that's not part of your character. People rather ruminate on the problem instead because they don't want to admit their actions. Forgiveness requires a person to change when acknowledging what they did, and some are not ready to do so. Assuming you need to change your ways is a start, but you need to engage in appropriate action to move on effectively. And it goes on to really how to practice. And many of these places that I've checked out offers the fact that the first thing you have to do is what we do is to sit. To sit and let us be in the now. And that allows us a sense, a little bit of confidence that we can basically achieve, as he said, our true values and our true self. So I know a lot of this sounds very obvious. And you know what? It is obvious that we have these struggles within ourselves, wallowing in guilt, having it arise again and again and again, not able to totally quell it. For me, the most important teaching, and I've had to go through the process of tshuva, unfortunately, very painful process, very difficult process. But the idea would be, and this is Rav Soloveitchik says it so beautifully, is to become somebody else, become somebody new. And that's perhaps why Yom Kippur is seen as a death reenactment. If you die to yourself, and then you emerge again as something hopefully new. And this is true also of our understanding of the universe, that it is forever, forever being renewed. B'chol yom tamid, maaseh b'reishit. Every day, steadily, we see the acts of creation. So I leave it now for openness. As I say, I don't have any final words, because, as I say, I think all of us will approach this in their own way. Unless everybody here is a tzaddik and has never made a mistake, then you don't need to tune in anymore. You're good, but I doubt that's the case. So let's see what we have going. Excuse me. You can raise your hand or your foot, whatever you.